The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hear a train a-coming, it's the Trump train. Hey, we got Trump news today. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Nick. How the heck are you, my friend?
I am just happier than, I can't even tell you how happy I am to be here. We're going to do a special on Donald Trump. We're going to talk about the can of worms that the idiots opened up when they indicted Donald Trump on January 6th, and then I had a special guest at my house yesterday. Charlie Manure came by and tried to get me to sign up for the recall.
Did you sign it? Did you sign it?
No, but he almost convinced me.
Then he opened his mouth.
Yeah, then he opened his mouth. Blue's always been my favorite color, but I'm wavering from it. But let's do the weather report. It's not raining, but it's going to be sprinkling with sarcasm for the next hour.
Yes, heavily at times.
Anyway, Doug has a food alert that you need to be aware of. He's going to read it to you. I had to give it to Doug because there's some big words that I can't pronounce. But you need to watch the labels on your food for these. Go ahead, Doug.
Now, folks, for the folks who are big into the crickets and to the mealworms and grasshoppers, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to try my best to say these words. Bug alert, look out for the following additives in your food. Grilloed sigillitus, dried crickets. Tenebrio molitor, hole and ground mealworms, Locusta migratoria, hole and ground grasshoppers, Acetta domesticus, hole and ground crickets. They're going to be added to your food. Make sure to check your ingredients before you buy. Look at the small print because it was probably written in insect ink, is my thought.
Could be.
Could be, yeah, it's very possible. So, yeah, I mean, you know, this sounds, wow, tempting. I will say that Liam did tell us before the show that crickets with cheese powder tasted pretty good. He did say that. I will say that.
You know, I saw that samples over at Costco, but I didn't see anybody trying them.
Liam was there. We missed him.
I ate all of them.
In fact, he took 4 changes of shirts, and he just made a circle around him. Kept around the aisle.
And kept thanking the old lady every time he went by. Thank you very much. This is the greatest stuff ever.
You know, now that I'm a little bit older, my appetite has feathered down, and I do take a different shirt, and I go into Costco, and I hit all the samples once. Then I change my shirt and go around and hit them again, and I call that dinner at times.
Well, if you hit it at the right time, just before the closing, they actually have extra, you might be able to get a second helping, my friend.
Isn't that right?
Yes, you know, Nick, it's funny. The good thing about liberals, well, there is no good thing about liberals, but the good thing about liberals is they do stuff, they get caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and when they do stuff, it ends up backfiring on them usually 100% of the time. And I say usually, it does 100% of the time because the ideas are so stupid. And as you and I are about to explain, and I've got some stuff as well, is by them pushing this BS Trump on the Jan 6th, and he was a vote a fraud denier and all this good stuff, the reality is they've opened a can of worms. Take it away, Nick.
The charge against Trump are that he did not tell the truth about the legacy of votes, the legality of votes cast in that election, and so fraudulently and in bad faith, excuse me. But such an indictment gives him the power of defense, the truth. He now has the right to argue in court for the first time ever that he told the truth about the 2020 presidential election. In previous cases brought in state courts to show fraud and acceptance of ballots, Trump and his supporters were plaintiffs. For us, they had the duty to come forward with clear evidence of fraud enough to get a trial. Such evidence they did not have, as it was in possession of local election officials who did not turn it over to Trump. As a result, judges refused to let these cases go to trial where evidence would be presented to a jury for their consideration. Until today, there has been no court examination of relevant evidence on the legality of ballots counted, nor count determination that the election was either fair or fraudulent. Now Trump is the defendant, and in order to prove he was a liar, the Department of Justice has the duty to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the election was fair. As a defendant in a criminal case, Trump is presumed innocent and has the right to introduce contradicting the government's accusation that he was a liar. The indictment against Trump allows him on the stand local election officials. Boy, I'm having a heck of a
Come on,
time
Sleepy.
Reading.
Bring it back, Sleepy. Come on. Bring it back.
Baby. I'm going to bring it home right now. The indictment against Trump thrust allows him to put on the stand local election officials to testify under oath whether each vote counted under their supervision was cast by a living American citizen registered to vote and legally entitled to the privilege of voting. If those witnesses can't prove the validity of votes for Biden, then Trump will vindicate his assertion that the unfairness of the presidential election. He can also put Mark Zuckerberg on the stand to testify how much money he gave to finance the collection of ballots by Democratic operatives and how the operation worked in practice. He can introduce Dinesh D'Souza's documentary 2,000 Mules for the jury to consider. He can make a national spectacle of the Democratic scheming and manipulation of ballots cast, like he needs any help for that. It will be the burden of the Democrats to prove the validity of each and every vote recorded by the state election officials. The defense offers Exhibit A as the election fraud occurred. We Democrats, this is a quote from Joe Biden on October 24th, 2020, 10 days before the election, and then we're going to go to a clip. We Democrats have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics. Now you're going to hear some Democrats, what they had to say in 2016. Clip one, please.
Searches have repeatedly demonstrated that ballot recording machines and other voting systems are susceptible to tampering.
Even hackers with limited prior knowledge, tools, and resources are able to breach voting machines in a matter of minutes.
In 2018, electronic voting machines in Georgia and Texas deleted votes for certain candidates or switched votes from one candidate to another.
The biggest seller of voting machines is doing something that violates Cybersecurity 101, directing that you install remote access software, which would make a machine like that, you know, a magnet for fraudsters and hackers.
These voting machines can be hacked quite easily.
You could easily hack into them. It makes it seem like all these states are doing different things, but in fact, three companies are controlling this.
It is the individual voting machines that pose some of the greatest risks.
There are a lot of states that are dealing with antiquated machines, right, which are vulnerable to being hacked.
The workers were able to easily hack into an electronic voting machine. It was possible to switch votes.
43% of American voters use voting machines that researchers have found have serious security flaws, including back doors.
We know how vulnerable now our systems were. I know that hackathon that took place last year where virtually every machine was broken into fairly quickly.
I actually held a demonstration for my colleagues here at the Capitol where we brought in folks who before our eyes hacked election machines, those that are being used in many states.
Aging systems also frequently rely on unsupported software like Windows XP in 2000, which may not receive regular security patches and are thus more vulnerable to the latest methods of cyber attack.
In a close presidential election, they just need to hack one swing state, or maybe one or two, or maybe just a few counties in one swing state.
I'm very concerned that you could have a hack that finally went through.
So, you know, one of those was Kamala Harris. She
took, just wanted to say.
She took the machines to the White House, to the legislator, and explained it. Hillary Clinton was in there. Sheila Jackson was in there. Those were all Democrats.
For the record, those were all liberal Democrats bitching about those machines. For the record, make sure you understand, that was all Democrats.
Whining in 2016. And what was it that Hillary said? If he gets elected, we're all going to hang?
Well, yeah, she did say that once, but then she killed the person whoever she was going to have hang her, so she's off the hook.
You know, some of the things that Trump can bring up is, you know, there's still 9,000 votes that haven't been counted in Arizona with Carly Lake and Hobbs.
Yeah.
Haven't been counted yet. You know, show a documentary, show a film of them putting cardboard over the windows so people can't look in at the vote counters. Do you remember that? They had vote counters. They were counting after they got sent home, and they drug boxes out from underneath the tables. There's so much evidence that Trump is going to bring out in his defense.
Thank you, liberals.
A lot.
Well, you know what's funny is, Nick, I'd like to take this moment to thank Mr. Patrick Jones, Chris Kellstrom, and Kevin Cry for getting us out of that system, saving us the money, because Dominion, as per their CEO, is going to file bankruptcy. He wasn't gray about it. He said this is going to cause his company to go bankrupt. So not only did we not send money to a defunct, soon-to-be-defunct, corrupt system, as per the liberals' words themselves, Kevin Cry sided with the liberals and got rid of defunct voting machines. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Patrick. I just want to put that out there. Little love for the three, because they supported the liberal side on this one.
And they saved us quite a bit of money, but it wasn't just the Dominion machines. It's any machine.
Any machine.
You know, and it's not just the machine. It's from the minute they mail out the ballot till it gets to the machine. There's so many opportunities for somebody to cheat.
Well, Cash Patel came to town and he laid out the statistical impossibility that if Biden got all those votes here locally that he got in a county that's registered 2-to-1 Republican to Democrat, and somehow out of the blue, Sleepy Joe staying in his basement, never coming out like Groundhog Day, somehow managed to, I think it was by over 100% increase his vote count in a conservative county, and he laid it out, and it was actually quite interesting. And so now, thanks to the liberals, this is it. You know what, Nick? Today, let's thank a liberal. Give a liberal a hug, because not only did their people hate the voting machines, they have given Donald Trump the megaphone to talk about voter fraud. And now the government, like you said, is going to have to show their hand on what it is that they say made it so safe. And they're not going to be able to do that. This is great. This is great news.
I think they've realized what they've done, because now they're trying to censor the trial off the Internet. They don't want anybody to see it. Trump has demanded that they have cameras and it be televised, the trial.
And he's a defendant. So, I mean, if anybody doesn't want to have stuff seen, it's usually a defendant. They don't want to know what's happening in the background. And for him to sit there and say, I want this to be publicized, that's bad omens, Mr. and Mrs. Liberal. That is not a good thing for you. Your side shot yourself in the foot with a shotgun. Congratulations. Jack Smith, you are amazing.
Amazingly. Well, I don't know. You know, he's got some baggage, too, some prosecutions that he did. Are you familiar with those?
I was, yes. Over the week, he has been involved in that. That's actually going to bring me to something else that I want to bring up in a bit, because I've been saying it since the beginning, and I didn't realize how prophetic I was, because I'm not generally a very smart guy, as anybody who knows me will attest, but I remember sitting there on the night one certain person got elected, and when they started announcing this result, my wife says I look like somebody had literally stabbed me in the stomach, and I mean, I was despondent. And she looked at me and she goes, what's wrong? It's just an election. I said, we just ruined America. We just elected the worst president in the United States history. Turns out he was a black guy, but the black guy didn't matter to me. It was who he hung out with, what he said. But Obama is the one who's been pulling the strings. And, yes, Mr. Smith was Obama's little henchman. He'd go out and do the heavy hitting for Mr. Barack Obama.
You know, you brought up black guy. I wanted to bring to everybody's attention that my grandmother's name was Zula Mae Gardner. Her maiden name was Zula Mae Biden. And she told me one time, one of the brief conversations I ever had with her, that she had relatives in South Carolina that had slaves, and that actually after the Civil War, the slaves stayed with them. And so evidently he was a good slave owner. But I always wondered, Zula Mae, that just doesn't seem like, that sounds like maybe an African name or something, a cross between America and Africa. And I was looking here about 2 months ago about 23andMe, and I was reading a comment or something, and it said something about ancestries. I always thought 23andMe was a little teeny bopper girl site where they got Barbie dolls or Barbie doll clothes or that kind of stuff, you know. So I went to it, and it was reasonably priced, so I went ahead and checked my ancestry. And I have 7% black blood in me. Do you know what that means? White is the new black.
There you go.
And Nathan and I are N-word brothers.
Wow. Newsflash right there. You got it. You heard it first on Poke the Hornet's Nest. Right there. Nick and Nathan are... Nick, leave it to you to make me laugh on this morning.
White is the new black.
There you go. Crying out loud. But no, you know, yes, you asked me, do I know who Jack Smith is? Yes, he is a complete hack henchman, and he has been doing Obama's dirty work for years. And we'll bring it back to Obama in a bit. But so he has opened a can of worms. He's not going to put the lid back on. Nice job, Jackie.
You know, I'm not so sure about that. The way these guys cheat, lie, and manipulate, it'll be interesting how they put the lid back on it. And I'm not so sure they won't be able to. It won't be legal.
Yeah, well, yeah, nothing they have done has been legal, and that's why there is some relative hope. I would love to know more about the judge up in, where was it, where old Hunter had his sweetheart deal rejected, and it's now back for him pleading not guilty. Because all of a sudden there is a judge, at least one, for a short window of time, that's willing to not just rubber stamp corruption. And so hopefully the person who's taken on Trump's case is willing to do the same thing. I'm hoping. I mean, you know, you got to have some hope in today's world.
You know, I want to read something. I read this on Carl's show the other day, but I wanted to read this, what this gal said about President Trump. Her name is Ada Lusch, L-L-U-C-H. Every time I hear about President Trump having sex with a woman and being in the news for it, I just remember that he's one of the rare world leaders who actually likes to sleep with grown women instead of children like the majority of these disgusting pedophiles.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
Yeah.
And if you watch The Sound of Freedom, that probably rings a little true right there.
Oh, gosh. You know, we're going to get into Kevin Cry and what's been going on with supervisors. And everybody, get a pen and a piece of paper. I'm going to tell you how to go to the supervisors' meetings. I'm going to give you timestamps that is going to explain Kevin's position easily, and you can understand it, because my experience with a Reading Record searchlight, I call it the daily movement, nothing's truthful in there.
No.
Everything is manipulated, and it's just absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, this morning's letters to the editor, all they do is print letters that are negative and are against Kevin Cry. As a matter of fact, and I hope we have time to get to this, Charlie Manure stopped at my house yesterday, not knowing who I was, and tried to get me to sign a recall.
Well, you know.
I had a really good time playing with Charlie.
Well, it's not hard. I mean, first off, everything they have said, everything they have alleged, everything that they believe in is a patent lie. And I was reading the letters to the editor from, I think it's called a whatever cafe you sent to me this morning, Nick. And the problem with liberals is they're delusional. They believe their lies. And even this list of three letters you sent to me, every one of them is fully based on complete lies. But they believe it. That makes them true believers. So we will definitely want to hit on that. We'll talk about Kevin. And also I wanted to talk about the fact that California has really just taken a bullet to the head. So if you were thinking of leaving, pack up sooner. Mr. Newsom just elected, or I should say just appointed, 17 uber liberal judges to our court system. So if you thought it was bad before, 17 new losers have just been appointed, and two of them are local, and one of them, I think, in my opinion, is a payoff to PG&E, because he was the prosecutor in the PG&E case who fumbled the ball at the one-yard line, had PG&E dead to rights, and didn't present all the evidence, which is one of the things Kevin has researched. And as soon as the judge over that case made the finding, that prosecutor in Bridget's DA's office retired, and it was immediately awarded with a judgeship here in Shasta County.
Well, you don't think Gavin saw him retired and said, we just can't let this guy go. He can't wander off down to Tahiti and drink mint juleps on the beach. He needs to stay here.
Well, I think they took a page out of Quid Pro Quo Joe, and PG&E just got off of what could have been manslaughter charges. Now, who would have gone to prison? Probably nobody, but they killed four people. It's beyond a shadow of a doubt they killed four people. The judge in his finding basically said there wasn't enough evidence to show that PG&E was aware of this tree, and Kevin documented that, in fact, there was plenty of evidence. And the guy who withheld the evidence was rewarded with a judgeship in Shasta County. And who is one of Newsom's biggest contributors? PG&E. That screams quid pro quo right there.
I'm going to read this letter to the editor. That was this morning, and I'm going to try and not butcher it this time. Warm up my vocal cords here. This is by Robert Walden. He's a liberal here. He gets his letter to the editor in quite often in a swipe at us. What has happened to the Republican Party that used to believe in the rule of law and had a moral compass? What is it that they have so easily led astray from principled approach to responsible political reality? Perhaps it is because they have no positive platform for the good of the country. It is just easier to follow an offensive, bellicose, wannabe autocrat grounded in lie, innuendo, and misstatement who appeals to the basest emotions of the Republican membership. Trump saw Republicans as the sheep who would follow a wolf wherever he wanted to go. And you know, Trump sure screwed us. You know, we were energy independent. Yep. Gas is $2 cheaper than what it is now. He had closed the borders. How could he do that?
I say terrible.
No inflation.
Terrible.
Employment was at an all-time low, historically low for minorities.
And women.
He didn't start a war.
Nope.
He signed peace accords, four peace accords in the Middle East. That no good SOB Trump and his mean tweets.
Mr. Walden, you are so right. We have lost our way. I cannot believe that Trump actually did all of that, and you consider that to be, Trump, what a loser. My gosh. You know, Nick, that goes back to what I was saying, is these people are blanking delusional. The reality is his side, you know, I liken a liberal to the people who believed in the early Nazi party. You know, the Nazis were really good besides killing all those people. The Liberal Party people are really good besides every policy. I mean, this guy was probably okay with mutilating young women, young boys, putting sex books into the schools. That's his side. He can claim that side. That's what he thinks is good, folks. So let that sink in. That's his party's platform. He is the party of this Mr. Walden and Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I mean, these people are delusional.
We're going to go to a break right now, so get ready, Liam. When we come back, we're going to hit on what's going on at the supervisors' meetings.
Yep.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Wings of Summer Butterfly House is open now at Turtle Bay Exploration Park, featuring hundreds of butterflies in a tranquil enclosed garden, perfect for all ages and nature enthusiasts. Come find your favorite butterfly species using our ID cards as you make your way through this peaceful exhibit filled with fluttering winged friends. Presented by Weichart Realtors, Domke & Associates. Open now through August 13th. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Thank you. Imagine a 34-year-old single mother leaving a full-time job to open a home care agency out of her dining room. Hi, this is Sharon Clark, CEO of Home Helpers, and that was my choice 19 years ago, and what a ride it has been. I was proudly my agency's first caregiver in August of 2004. Since then, Home Helpers has supported 2,500 families, employed 1,300 caregivers, moved 3 offices, and won numerous awards. Personally, our staff provided services for my aging grandparents, allowing them to stay at home in their final years. Home Helpers continues to thrive as Reading's leader in home care. Thank you to our wonderful community for championing my vision so many years ago. Thank you to the dedicated caregivers, past and present, for your compassion and professionalism. And thank you to the families who entrusted us with caring for your loved ones. Our services range from meal preparation to bathing assistance to transitioning home from the hospital. Learn more at ReadingHomeHelpers.com. 19 years and counting. Home Helpers. Life takes you to unexpected places. Love leads you home.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Today, Simpson University continues to provide a Christ-centered education, graduating students with mature and infectious faith, critical competence, and a ready spirit to thrive as servant leaders around the world and at our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Sorry, honey, that I suspected she was you, and I can't cry anymore.
Cry any either.
But since I left, feeling better.
Okay, that's enough. We're enough. We're going to clips. I want to get to one thing. Doug wanted to bring up the 30-year agreement with the Indians, and this was one of my conversations with Charlie Lemoore yesterday. He said that Kevin had cost us millions and millions by making that deal. And I said, well, how'd he do that? Well, the other tribes are paying their law enforcement a lot more. I said, well, how much have we been getting in the last 30 years? We haven't got anything, have we? Well, no, but we could have got more. I said, well, you know, we got, I said, now listen to this. I said, we got $5 million, right? He says, yeah, right. But what's that over 30 years? Well, the fact is we got $1.2 million, I think the sheriff did. And I says, we got $1,000 a call. And he says, well, how do you make a budget on that? You don't know how many calls you're going to be. I said, well, how did he do it before when they didn't get nothing? You know, we do it. This is all extra money that we would have never got, and they could have walked any time when they decided we were being a little bit too greedy.
Well, and you know, it's funny, Nick, is I take issue with Mr. Johnson and Stephanie Bridget for not being fully honest, and they knew that thing has been going on out there. They knew that there was discussions. Bridget is on record as saying she was part of the actual negotiations. And then when it finally gets signed, approved, 4-1 is what I believe it was, they come out saying, oh, well, I knew nothing about this. I wasn't included, which is just a blatant lie. There's just no way the sheriff did not know that area was going to have law enforcement issues. And the reality is, for the liberals listening, which probably are none, but if you are, your holy grail, Moti, Kehoe, Rickards, Comente et al., got us zero. Zero. We never got a penny, and just 7 months or 8 months into the job, we have secured, I think up front, like Nick says, $5 million. I think fire calls are $12,000 per call, and law enforcement's $1,000 per call. So we went from getting nothing since the day the tribe is opened and all of those great supervisors who did nothing, to now we actually have something. And one of the people on the letter to the editor talked about how can we lock ourselves in on a 30-year thing because we just don't know the economy. We sign 30-year loans on our houses every single day. What's the problem? What's the issue?
You know, the public is hearing what the media wants them to hear. You need to go to the supervisor's website and click on video meetings, view meetings. That's what it is, view meetings. You click on that and you can get the videos. We're going to come up with some clips off of here, but I would encourage you to go and listen to these clips, and I'm going to give you a timestamp where to start. But what you do is Shasta County Supervisors, Click on them, and it'll say meetings and agendas, meeting videos. That's the one you want to click on. If you go to the August 8th, 8th one, click on that meeting and go to, I think it's 2 hours and 36 minutes, and that starts the presentation that Kevin gives, and it goes for quite a little bit, 30 minutes or so, and you can get the whole gist of what's going on. Can we hear the first clip? This is 223. This is the supervisors' meeting on 8-1. I'm sure butchering everything today. I'm sorry.
I'm telling you, Sleepy's entered the house.
Some context. PG&E was charged with 29 criminal counts, including 4 manslaughter charges. In early 2023, a preliminary hearing was conducted. The judge in that hearing found that there was probable cause to bring PG&E to trial for a number of the charges, including the 4 manslaughter charges. PG&E then filed a motion called the 995, which you just heard, which is a type of appeal which is heard by another judge. Of course, you don't want the same judge can't hear it, or that'd be pointless. And that second judge granted PG&E the 995 motion, meaning that the judge found there was not probable cause to bring PG&E to trial on manslaughter charges. So at last week's meeting, I really didn't understand DA Bridget's the legalese answer, which I didn't know what a 995 was, so I had to go back and look. So in your view, you know, she answered it correctly. As she states, the judge had granted PG&E the 995 motion, would have denied PG&E's motion, had PG&E known about the dangers of this gray pine. Stated in my words, the judge didn't believe PG&E was guilty, but I read his ruling, and his ruling states, had the tree been identified and marked for removal at any of the 4-plus opportunities to do so prior to ignition of the Zog fire, the failure to have it removed would clearly be reckless and criminally negligent. He also goes on to state that this tree was not a known risk prior to the Zog fire, and there is no evidence to support the people's claim that it was. So this was troubling to me because after last week's meeting, I started to go back into transcripts of the court, and I realized that gray pine was, in fact, marked for removal, and it was extremely common knowledge. Now, I don't want to go down there, but...
Okay, we can go forever listening to this. I chopped up these clips for the main point. But the fact Kevin's going to make is that statement that the gray pine was a threat wasn't in the transcripts for the second hearing.
Which meant that the prosecuting lawyer didn't put him in there.
Well, I'm not going to point fingers, but he didn't see that. So go ahead with the second clip.
The cause of the Zog fire was determined to be a gray pine falling in a southerly direction, striking power lines owned and operated by Pacific Gas and Electric. The gray pine was over 105 feet tall and over 2 feet in diameter at the base. The tree had decay and a significant cavity at the base of the tree that would have predisposed it to a downslope failure. The tree was over 80 years old, and in 2019, it had a 23-degree lean towards the power lines. The lean would have been obvious to pre-inspectors. Decay was observed in the center of the tree. The cavity and absence of supporting roots on the cavity side would have been visible from the sides and uphill, even if briefly viewed. If established protocols for hazard tree identification and removal had been followed, the tree defect would have been discovered and subsequently removed prior to failure. I mean, this is all publicly available. It demonstrates in 2018, PG&E marked the gray pine for removal that caused the Zog fire. So
let me point out, the fire was in 2020, so they knew that was a potential danger.
Well, and that's what I was saying. That's when I said that Hannah didn't provide the stuff, because if PG&E was petitioning the first judge's finding, it would have been Hannah's responsibility. That would have been attorney Hannah's responsibility to prepare his argument against the judge's or the PG&E's 995 filing. So it was his responsibility to do it. And according to the testimony that Kevin cites, the second judge who found for PG&E did not find any evidence of that in that situation. And Mr. Hannah's reward for doing such a good job, being a great lapdog, in my opinion, is he got handed a judgeship by Governor Newsom, whose largest supporter is, or one of his largest, is PG&E. Folks, follow the money. Something stinks to this, and Kevin's on to it.
And we've got a third clip right here.
California Public Utilities Commission, State of California. Enforcement Division. Mountain G performed vegetation management work in August 2018 in the area near the Zog Mine Road in Shasta County. On August 23rd, 2018, Mountain G identified two gray pine trees, tree IDs number 6557 and 6558, for removal under priority two. However, PG&E did not remove the gray pines. SCD has determined with a high degree of certainty that the tree that fell and struck the power lines was either tree ID 6557 or 6558. In addition, based on PG&E's aerial photos and the position of the marked trees to the power lines, there were no other...
So there's only two there, and one of them fell on it. He's just established that they did know they had a fire, possible fire danger there.
Yep. Again, this is one of those things where there's smoke, there's probably fire. And it's funny is they're lighting Cry up because he didn't go one-on-one face-to-face with Stephanie Bridget. Well, let's remind our listeners that during the election, last election for Stephanie Bridget, it was brought out by the opposition and never denied by Stephanie Bridget that her office was the most cited office by the state of California for withholding exculpatory evidence in defendants. So she has a history of not presenting evidence that would actually save a person who may or may not have actually deserved to go to jail. That's another story. But she has a history of doing this, and here's a case where they had the evidence and it wasn't presented to a judge. This is totally in line with what our DA's office there has done based on historical precedent.
Okay, well, what I would like to point out now is that judge overturned the findings that this could go to trial.
Yep.
And so our district attorney's office decided that they wouldn't pursue criminal and they would settle civil case. And they got $50 million. So there's a lot of people that are dissatisfied with where that $50 million went. But here's one thought I had. Just because they didn't pursue the criminal case and they pursued a civil case doesn't mean that they can't pursue a criminal case now.
Well, I would imagine. I mean, it's not double jeopardy because it actually never went to trial. There was never a finding.
So I'm thinking that Kevin's pointing us in the direction that we can still prosecute them criminally, and grant you nobody's going to go to jail, but perhaps there's going to be a bigger financial output there. And it seems like to me that the supervisors meeting on 8-4 this last Thursday, and I've got a timestamp for that. You need to go to that and listen to that. Their main objective about doing anything more with this is because it brought up bad memories for the families, the four families, that it just brought it all back to them and they were suffering. And they don't seem to, they don't mention all the other people that are suffering. There was a couple there that spoke at public comment that are still suffering. They didn't lose anybody. But it's all about those four families, and I'm not running them down, but there's other people that are suffering from this fire too. So let's play this clip from the meeting on August 4th.
He knew that a gray pine caused this fire. And then somehow the individual up there forgets. And we had a person come up, whether they're an attorney or not. I have no reason to believe that the individual's not. So they made a claim that the evidence wasn't there. Well, tree ID 6557 and 6558, there, in fact, with GPS coordinates, it was very, very clear that PG&E knew. And the process of it, what I realized when I met with Stephanie Bridget, with our CEO, Rickert, was I asked two pretty simple questions. Was Judge Flynn made aware, did he know that trees 6557 and 6558 caused this fire? And her response was all evidence was submitted, and that wasn't the question. The question I was asking was Judge Flynn made aware that those are the two trees? And she just kind of stared at me, because what I know is just because those that evidence is written in, it becomes hearsay if the person can't or won't corroborate that statement. So it doesn't actually technically get, it's entered into evidence, but it can't be used. So it's as good as a piece of paper. So the question that I went to then is, if the DA really wanted to prosecute this criminally and has a clear path to do it, why would you then not refile? And then she had mentioned that It was 2 years, and it was time to move on for the families and the community and so on and so forth. But for me, the district attorney's job is to prosecute crimes, not to get money.
So there you have it.
Hmm.
That spells it out.
And there he was. He was asking Stephanie Bridget if we believe this to be true, and I haven't seen her come out say that it is not true what he just said. he gave her a chance to say, you know, was the evidence fully presented, and she did a total liberal answer. Well, we put everything in there, but he asked her specifically, did they bring that tree up, and she didn't answer it.
And it's even on GPS.
Yeah.
They've got it zeroed in. But, you know, the thing is, this is what really caused a controversy. And it's going to come back. It's going to be in a future meeting. Kevin asked for $10,000 to get outside criminal counsel, to look at this case to see if we do have a case to go forward.
Well, and the thing is, PG&E, I mean, I get it. They have thousands of miles of line, and they can't watch every one. But this is a clear-cut case where, you know, this wasn't a transformer that blew up in lightning. This was a tree that was known publicly, at least by anybody involved in that business, that tree was going to fall at some point in the near future.
It's negligence. I owned a house over on West Street, and it had an old scraggly black walnut. And, I mean, this was a diseased, ugly tree. I don't know why it even had leaves on it. And it hung over the street where I parked my pickup. So I called the city of Reading, and they sent their guy out. And he said, oh, you know, they're really touchy about taking these old trees out. I said, well, this one's not even 12 inches in diameter. And it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just a scroungy old scrub oak as far as I'm concerned. And he says, well, you know, I don't think we'll probably take that out. And I says, well, what if that limb falls on my pickup? Who's going to pay for the damages? He says, well, that's nature. And I said, well, no, it's not. Now that I've pointed it to your, brought it to your attention, it's negligence. And, you know, they got that tree out within a week.
Oh, I bet.
You know, and that's what this case is. It's
yes.
Negligence.
Yep. That you know, which Nick, you know, hit on, four people did die because of this. They would be alive today, otherwise speaking. And there are over 200 structures that burned in that. And so this was known hazard. It caused death and destruction, and PG&E got a slap on the wrist, and the prosecuting attorney got a judgeship. It's that simple. That's how you cut it down. That's as simple baked as I can make it right there.
From the little bit that we know.
Well, from the stuff that's public, and Kevin's been pretty vocal about this.
Oh, yes. The thing is, he's vocal about it, but if you're not going to the meetings, if you're reading the paper.
The paper's just lying.
That's right, and it makes Kevin look bad, and here's these idiots, these BB brains trying to recall him.
Yeah.
But then again, there's a big complaint about where the money went, the $50 million went. Now, how much? The sheriff got a big chunk. Law enforcement and fire got a big chunk of that. There was residents there at the meeting that are complaining that they weren't made whole, that it was all about these four families. And the DA, Stephanie Bridget, said that she asked these four families where they wanted the money to go. One family wound up $7.2 million went to the Legacy Center, and I'm going to tell you what that is pretty quick. The other family, Spay and Neuter and Haven Humane, was real important to them. So they got, I think each one of those got $200,000. And the other family just said law enforcement and fire. And so they didn't, nothing special went because they already got a whole bunch
Nick,
of money.
Stop.
No, wait a minute. I'm on a roll.
Keep going. I want to go because the thing about the 30-year deal is how can they budget for it?
Yeah.
Did he budget for this?
There you go.
Continue on.
Do you know what the Legacy Center is?
I do not.
Okay. I've talked to a lot of people that don't know what the Legacy Center is. So I looked it up, and I saw their board of directors, and I called one of them and asked him if he would have a private meeting with me 10 minutes and explain to me what the Legacy Center is. I'm not going to tell you who he is. I'm going to give you his initials. It's Bill Schuler.
Narrows it down.
Bill's always been great with me. I call him, or I go to city council meetings. I want to talk to him on the side. He's happy to talk to me, and he gives me straight answers. The Legacy Center is a program that was put together for trafficked, abused, sexually abused minors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the reason they put that together is you say, take some little boy that's 12 years old and he's been sexually abused, maybe pimped out. And there's a complaint made. Well, he's got to tell a police officer. Then he's got to tell CPS. Then he's got to tell the district attorney. Then he's got to tell the judge, and on and on and on. And it's traumatic as heck. I can understand that. So they made this legacy center, and it's got a room in there that's soothing to people. And so they would have this little boy come in. This is a fictitious example. And they have a professional forensic investigator, interrogator, talk to him. And she pries out what happened without, you know, your finger in his face, without leading. She can't lead him. She can't coerce him. And then you've got all these other people, the DA, the CPS, the lawyers, everybody else sitting over there in a one-way mirror. The kid doesn't know they're there. And they can base their prosecutions or whatever they're going to do off of that. So the only time the kid might have to go back to trial again is in front of a judge.
Wow.
That's what the Legacy Center is all about, and that is a really good deal in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm glad they got the $7 million hearing this now.
I think, well, the thing is, the Legacy Center didn't have any bones in the Zog fire. So, you know, there's a controversy about all this money going to them instead of the guy that, you know, had his house burned. Or what was it, the Grange out there?
Yeah.
Their Grange burnt down. That was built in 2013 by the people there. It was getting, and nobody's made them whole.
Yeah.
There's other places this money could have gone to that people think that it should have.
Well, and, based on the numbers you laid off, it sounds like, you know, up to $9 million, $10 million went to Legacy and various things. And then you said that the remainder, the one family, said they wanted to go to law enforcement and firefighting. Do we know how much actually went to law enforcement and firefighting? Maybe we can find that out for our next show.
Well, that's easy enough to find out. I should have wrote it down. It was about 75-80% of it.
Well, that would have been, you know, if that's the case, out of a $50 million settlement, and if there's about $10 million that went to Legacy and $200,000 here, there, and the other, I mean,
seven went to Legacy. Bella Vista Farms got, I think, $400,000.
Okay.
And that was questioned. I mean, they're a great outfit and everything, but what they do as far as the Zog fire goes.
Well, then let's do some homework between now and our next show. Let's do a little research and find out where this money went because, you know.
Oh, it's easy enough to do. If you go to the meeting before, prior to 8-1 and fish around, it's easy enough to find the presentation that Stephanie Bridget gave, and it's all there in black and white.
Well, and the reason I bring that up is because, you know, one of the arguments from these morons about Kevin Cry is, you know, how or and this 30-year deal with the tribe is how can law enforcement budget when they don't know how many calls they're going to get, blah, blah, blah. Well, here's a windfall. And if the numbers are where you have kind of stated them, it's a major, substantial windfall to the sheriff's department and to the
Oh, absolutely.
Department. And how do we budget for that?
But
how,
that's not enough to get that third floor of the jail open.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So when these people use this argument that, you know, this deal that was put together to tie this back to this settlement is budgets are guidelines. They're kind of bumpers on the side, and things change throughout. You know, sometimes you have more calls, sometimes you have less calls. Sometimes you have more money coming in, sometimes less. And here's a massive windfall that I want to find out what it is. And for these people on Kevin Cry to sit there and use the fact that him and the others supported this 30-year deal, well, the Zog Fire settlement's a clear example of a positive windfall, and I want to know how much that is. How could the sheriff and the fire department budget for that?
And I think the sheriff got $5 million. Is that money all going to go to the Zog Fire community out there? That's going to be spread out to everybody. And this settlement, in my opinion, should have been for the Zog Fire victims.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, PG&E, you know, has been paying a lot of money. And I ran into somebody who got a settlement from the Camp Fire, and they were due, I think, almost $800,000. And so far they've been paid $200,000 because PG&E's claiming that they're – because of the bankruptcy, they don't have the rest of the money. So if, in fact, we got $50 million, we're probably doing better than the Camp Fire victims.
But we can still get more if we go to a criminal prosecution.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. This is a public civil liability lawsuit. These people out there at the Zog Fire can still sue them privately, civilly.
Yeah, and the problem is, though, on a one-to-one basis, it's massively expensive with the very unknown. You have to go at it with multiple peoples with, you know, a single group of lawyers, because if you had to hire somebody, I had to hire somebody, neighbor had to hire, somebody else had to hire, that becomes, you know, prohibitively expensive, and PG&E's got deep pockets. So the folks that are out there, I mean, you know, you're right. If they wanted to go after them.
Well, the cut-and-dried case that Kevin's pointed out, it should be a slam dunk.
Well, I think with the Newsom in there and the donations that PG&E gives to Newsom and this sweetheart placement of Hannah, you know, it kind of shows you where the justice system is right now, in my opinion.
Well, I think we've been shown where the justice system is right now by Hunter Biden and Joe Biden as compared to our President Trump.
And you know, let's go on to the Clintons and everybody else.
So let's get back to Charlie Manure and him coming and talking to me. He said that he talked about not the supervisors not being able to open the third level of the jail. And I said, well, isn't that the sheriff's responsibility? And he says, well, yeah, but it comes down to money. So I said, what you're saying is all our problems is because they don't have enough money. He said, yes. And I said, well, you know, we've been throwing money at education for years and years and years, and it seems to be getting worse. And he said, this is what he said to me. He says, well, you know, with COVID and everything, the kids got behind, and that's why education has gotten bad. And I said, well, you know, in the 60s, we were in the top 10. In the United States, California, even our university systems. And as time went on to now, to the, you know, early 20s to now, we're in the bottom 10, if not the worst one.
Yep.
Well, yeah. And he says, well, what'd COVID have to do with it?
Yeah.
Well, and we've been throwing money at it. And he says, well, we just can't hire dedicated enough the qualified help that we need. So I guess if we give them more money, they're gonna do a better job. But it's just never enough. And about that time, his wife walked up. She had parked next door. And she walked up and looked at me and turned around and walked back. I think she recognized me. And I looked at her and I thought, I'll bet she knows exactly how Jill Biden feels.
Well, you know, it's funny, Nick, you brought that up. We've got a couple minutes left here. Is I'm just going to give our listeners an update and make sure you're paying attention, because the ball is going to start dropping. They're going to start bringing COVID back. Old Sleepy and the gang are working on a climate crisis pandemic where they want to talk about restrictions. But you're going to start seeing COVID come back into the mainstream media as it's out there. There are cases, whatever, whatever. And as I cited on Carl Bott's show on Thursday, the dust is settling. It has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. It was a hoax. It's a flu. It's a nasty flu if you get it, and if you have pre-existing health conditions, it's a pain in the butt. But otherwise, it's a flu. And like every other flu, you do what you do. You flu it up, you stay home, and you don't go to work, and you don't, spread your germs, which we've been doing since the day I was, you know, first day in school. If you were sick, you stayed home. And I'm just telling you, it's going to be coming back, because they got to start setting up the distraction going into the election.
Let me add to that, but I want to tell everybody first, I'm encouraging you to go to the supervisors' meetings and listen, and especially listen to the last when the supervisors say what they did last week and what they're looking for. Those are really, really interesting, and you can see who's doing the work. Now, one of the things that Biden's threatening to do that I'm reading about is shutting down the country because of climate change.
That's what I said, the climate crisis.
Yeah, you watch. If they do that, mm-hmm. You watch. You people with electric vehicles, you can go ahead and go out. You're not polluting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is I was forwarded something from a friend of mine who's in Europe. And Europe, you know, the news over there is showing, it's saying it's horrendous. It's hot. It's a heat wave. People are dying. It's terrible. Well, they went back to the same exact German TV station back in 2017, and they show the map of Germany, and it's all green with, and this is all Celsius for the record, so it's 23, 25, 26 Celsius, and which is like 80 and 90 degrees here. Now it's red, and the numbers are 20 and 21, so it's colder now than it was then, and they've got it as climate crisis. There you go.
Peace, love, and water, beds. We're out.
So good, so good, I got to hear. Wow, I feel nice. The sugar is fine. I feel nice. The sugar is fine.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.